acquittal of Special Operations Chief Edward Gallagher of murder in San Diego. Gallagher was convicted only of posing for photos with the body of a 17-year-old militant. The lead prosecutor was removed before trial, and a witness surprised prosecutors by testifying he'd killed the prisoner. Partly cloudy today in the San Francisco Bay Area, highs in the 70s. In the central San Joaquin Valley, hot with highs in the 90s. I'm Max Pringle. News returns at 7 on KPFA. Democracy Now! Is next.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 17th and Sunday, August 18th at Portland Metro Arts in Portland. The Montevilla Jazz Festival features performances by Brian Smith, Dana Reason, Mel Brown and Gordon Lee, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 17th and Sunday, August 18th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the festival on Saturday from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Distanced yourself from the whole thing.
Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
Spent most of my life in prison.
Criminal records can prevent individuals from moving forward with their lives, particularly with employment and housing. Tune in to Prison Pipeline as we discuss how to get your criminal record expunged.
Join us on Prison Pipeline, May 27th at 6:30 p.m.
Now I'm free. Now I'm free.
He said, well, I think you better get out of Vanport as quick as you can. He said, the dike is broke, and he said, Vanport's going to be underwater before long.
At 4:17 p.m. on the 30th of May, the makeshift railroad dike holding back the Columbia River broke. In no more than 10 minutes, Vanport was 6 feet underwater.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, taking place now through June 5th in North and Northeast Portland. On Monday, May 27th, there will be a memory activism fair, which includes exhibits, listening stations, and artifacts from Vanport. Other events include documentary screenings of the Vanport Mosaic Oral History Project and Japanese Americans Beyond the Wire, walking tours, and more. Again, that's the Vanport Mosaic Festival, taking place now through June 5th in North and Northeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I am in the studio this week with a friend of mine who does incredible activist work. Her name is Heidi Lee. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, Alyssa.
And do you want to introduce your guest?
I would love to introduce my guest. You will find out shortly why we're here in the studio, but I brought my friend Michael Fuller, who is my lawyer.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Thank you for being Michael. Here.
Of course.
So, firstly, I want to give you your due, Heidi, because, as you know, I only have on people on my show that I know, that I work with, that are making an impact in the community. So the topic for the show this week is about banking, some of the worst players in the banking industry, some of the history, the brutal history, and some of the really shady contemporary things that banks do, and Heidi's special connection to it. But first, this is very important. Please take this love, Heidi. Okay? Don't stop me now.
Okay.
Heidi does incredible work around Palestine solidarity and fighting for BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, holding the Israeli government accountable for its human rights abuses against Palestinians and the open-air prison in Gaza, illegal settlements, and not allowing for Palestinians to return to their homes that they have been pushed from by the Israeli military and the government. So I just want to start off by giving you your respect so that people know who you are. So even though today we're not going to be talking mostly about Palestine, even though the connections to banking are apparent, I know you're going to go there, I just want people to know who you are.
Thank you.
You are very, very welcome. So can you just say what you are hoping to get out on the show today?
We need to have a conversation about Wells Fargo. And I think that you're going to bring a radical perspective on banking and Wells Fargo in general. I'm going to be very strategic in the way that I'm talking about it. But a lot of people and listeners out there, probably maybe many of you know me, are familiar with the fact that I did work at Wells Fargo. So I have some really interesting information and some updates on what's been happening. So I think it's really important that the general public knows what Wells Fargo is doing internally beyond what we've seen publicly and the remaking of ethics.
Thank you. About the public remaking and the remaking of ethics, can you talk a little bit about, and either of you actually, some of the campaigns to repair the damaged reputation that Wells Fargo has recently suffered? And they've gone on like a campaign to promote themselves as socially conscious and ethical.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, if you want to add to this, I can take that up first if you...
Yeah, I mean, Wells Fargo, you're talking about a bank that the Fed has said cannot grow, cannot add to its customer base and asset base until it changes its practices. And so one way to affect change would actually be to change the culture, and another way would be to invest in a huge advertising campaign. And so in early 2008, I believe, Wells Fargo began to place ads, basically telling customers in the world that it had changed its ways. I'm here to tell you that's absolutely not true. We've seen nothing but an uptick in the amount of customers, homeowners, and employees who've been wronged by Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. And we've got more clients looking to sue Wells Fargo now than before the alleged change that they've been advertising.
So respectfully, can you say why you are an authority here?
So I don't know that I'm so much of an authority, but I have a lot of experience with Wells Fargo.
Okay. Experienced pundit.
I grew up in a trailer park in Aloha, Oregon, and my mom got kicked out of the trailer park, as did all the other tenants, and all their homes got bulldozed over because banks basically just... the land got sold to a developer and the properties got demolished, and the banks made the trailer park owners pay for the loans even though they couldn't live in the homes anymore. So it forced my mom and a lot of other people into bankruptcy. So I came out of law school in 2009 just, you know, ready to sue all these banks. And the first bank I had the chance to sue was Wells Fargo. And I went to trial with Wells Fargo in a case called Culpepper v. Wells Fargo. My mom was there in the back of the courtroom. It was my first trial victory. Absolutely.
She's a great mom. Making your mama proud.
And we won. And this was a bank that had called a little old lady and her husband over 300 times with robo-dialed calls that they didn't want. And the judge held Wells Fargo ultimately in contempt of court. And that holding was upheld on appeal. And then I made a name for myself going after these banks. But Wells Fargo, you know, is easily the worst in breed out of every, you know, I would have to think that we filed, 10 times more lawsuits against Wells Fargo than any other bank. And, you know, almost every day we get somebody from across the country with some sort of complaint
reaching out
against
to you
Wells Fargo. Absolutely.
Because of the name you've created for yourself here.
Right. And I call myself the underdog lawyer. But part of that is we go up against, you know, banks like Wells Fargo. They've got unlimited cash. They hire the best attorneys money can buy. They're vicious. Just 2 weeks ago, they were filing court documents saying that I had some sort of personal vendetta against them when I'm just in court trying to represent my client, trying to get the best result that I can. I don't have a personal vendetta against Wells Fargo. If it changes practices, I'll move on to the next worst company in the world. But right now, Wells Fargo, I believe, is pound for pound the worst company in the world.
I think most descendants of African mm-hmm. enslaved people mm-hmm. and indigenous people probably have a vendetta against Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. And their championing of westward expansion and pioneering, which is really just slaughter. But I guess we should go on. So thank you for talking about your experience with them early on.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like you all are like the salt of the earth, and you just had the ground ripped up from under you. And I'm sorry to you. I'm sorry to your mother. I'm sorry to your community.
Well, thanks. And, you know, the good news is I had my sights set on Washington Mutual. That was actually the bank that I feel like screwed my mother over and forced her into bankruptcy. She filed a bankruptcy. She only had, you can go look it up in the public records. She had one debt, and that one debt was owed on her mobile home. And because of the way the laws work in Oregon, if you own a mobile home and it's bulldozed, you still have to keep paying the loan or file bankruptcy. But well-to-do people that own stick-built homes on land, if they get foreclosed on, it's a non-recourse state. They don't have to pay any deficiency balance. And so I felt especially angry about that because we were getting picked on because we grew up poor in a trailer park.
Sure.
And it was a predatory product that my mom was offered anyway. The mobile home actually decreases in value every year. The loan is interest only. It increases in value. And so unlike a stick-built homeowner who owns the land under it, it's actually a horrible investment. But the bank
perfectly
went
legal
bank-
though
perfectly legal of course, and the bank went bankrupt before I could even graduate law school. So I wanted to go out and get my revenge against Washington Mutual, but it ended up filing bankruptcy in the Great Recession of 2008 and never to be heard from again.
Wow. So
I just thought of a connection with Palestine. The work that I do is I'm a socialist, and I'm always thinking and analyzing the system. And when you said about bulldozing, I immediately thought of the history of the bulldozing of Palestinian homes. And they actually have to pay for that. They'll leave these random notices under a rock that get blown away by the wind. And Palestinians, if people don't know, actually have to pay for every oppressive thing that happens to them. And they have no recourse. So as you said in the beginning of the show, that's a very strong connection. I can't unframe what I know with Palestine, with connections to banking and capitalism and all of those things. So thank you for sharing that. But I just wanted to add that. So
I knew you were going to come with the heat. I wasn't worried at all.
Strategically.
So I hinted a little bit about Wells Fargo and their dealings in the transatlantic slave trade, the slave economy in the United States, and the genocide of indigenous people and their hand in it, in what they call westward expansion, manifest destiny, pioneering. I mean, these are words that they chose. Right? I don't choose those words for what they did. And there are many people who are rightfully concerned with Wells Fargo's history. Do you want to say anything about Wells Fargo's history?
So the stagecoach is the symbol of Wells Fargo, and we all know what that means. And we'll just say at a particular branch that I worked at, I won't be too specific with team member names, which is what they call people who work for Wells Fargo, team members. Lovely name. And stagecoach.
Workers is a little too dignified.
Yeah. So the stagecoach, actual original stagecoach. And at my job, I would watch them give tours and praise Teddy Roosevelt, and I squirmed, you know, but I was doing the good work, working at the bank under capitalism. Sometimes we take jobs that we have to take, but I think it's interesting. I'm going to make sure I keep myself on track, and I have just some notes. So forgive me if I'm reading straight from something, but I want to make sure I get this correct. So hot take, what you're talking about. Wells Fargo is more than just the organization from California. They have acquired many other financial entities over the years. One of these, Wachovia, is a North Carolina institution, and several of its subsidiaries, most notably the Bank of Charleston, owned slaves and otherwise supported and participated in the slave trade. Wells Fargo now owns all assets that descend from the Bank of Charleston. Wells Fargo is the legal continuation of the Bank of Charleston. So as you know, the banking system, the insurance system, was all founded in, you know, making profit off of enslaved people. So there's no bank that's free of that. But I think that's important, just that connection and the continuity where they try to keep remaking their image. And yet that's the history that they came over. So I think that pretty much hopefully sums up.
The ground from which you spring.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no getting away from it. You are who you are.
Exactly.
Okay. So if we can move into sort of moving into the future, Wells Fargo continues to be a violator of human rights, or that's the that's the charge against it, with some of its dealings with border control agencies and the funding and investment in oppressive structures. So can we go a little bit into what is happening at the border, and what does Wells Fargo have to do with it?
Yep, that's exactly why I am here. Michael, I guess I can pick up this part and explain my situation, and then Michael can pick up how he's connected to that.
And again, this is your lawyer, cases. Just for people who are coming
yes,
in.
Yes.
Okay.
So I worked at Wells Fargo from February 2017 to December 2018, and I resigned on ethical grounds. Just a hot take, quick cut to the chase. I have a lawsuit pending against Wells Fargo for retaliation and whistleblower protection. So basically what that looks like is that as a Wells Fargo team member, I was working at a particular location, and plainclothes police officers came into the location. And I just want to just give a context really quick. Everything I'm saying is documented by video evidence, and also all of these facts can be proved through records. So nothing I'm saying is hearsay, nothing of that. It can be proved and bared out by the facts. So I was asked to do a transaction and probably did a total of 8 to 10 over the period of about a little over a year and a half. Plainclothes Portland police officers come into the bank. They bring literally a brown paper bag. And the first transaction I was asked to do while choking on my thoughts about that was $304,000 in cash. And a joke made by a police officer that it was dirty money, because I asked, where did the money come from? I have to document that as a Wells Fargo team member. And he said, oh, it's drug bust money. I was like, ah, okay. So as the transaction proceeded, and then my manager kind of scurried over because she knows that probably would not sit well with me. So, but I was like, all right, I'm going to maintain. I got to keep the job. This is what we do under capitalism. So I maintained. I kept my cool. I continued on with it. I thought it was going to be a deposit. She was talking to me off to the side and said, you're going to be processing a cashier's check and I need you to just be as professional as possible. I said, okay. So I basically organized the cash, made a documentation of it. And I will note that the cash was very messy when it comes in. And when you work in banking, you know how cash is organized, when it's being going to be stored for a period of time or when it's going to be documented and there's going to be a paper trail. This money was not. It was basically messy piles and rubber bands. It's all on video, again, to bear out what I'm saying. So then I proceeded over to the computer, and I proceeded to pull up the, if I can say it, the City of Portland's account, because people should know that the City of Portland has all of the banking for the Portland Police Department. So then I asked them, okay, so who were we making this cashier's check out to? And they said, U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And I stopped for a moment and I said, come again? And he said, do you need me to spell it out for you? And I said, yes, please, would you spell that out for me? You know me, Alyssa.
I do know you, and I thank you, Heidi. Please go on. Everyone is enthralled.
So I remained composed. It was $304,000 cash, the first one I did. I knew that what's called an unusual activity report would be required for this, because anything over $5,000 cash, and this is all banking regulation, would need to be documented. That's only catch money laundering and businesses moving cash in unethical ways. However, this cash being made out for a cashier's check was not being deposited. So in my mind, I knew that something seemed off. I thought to myself, there's going to be no track record of this. There's no way. They're just basically moving it from point A to point B. And so I questioned it. After they left, I completed it. I did my due diligence. And then my manager pulled me aside and she said, you seem upset. And I said, well, this doesn't seem okay to me. And she basically said, oh, I'm sorry, I know, but sometimes we have to do things. I said, okay. Yeah. So that was the first time. That was about, I would say, April of 2017. So then they proceeded to come in maybe once or twice a month. And as I have noted and tracked back in my memory, those transactions are never less than $10,000 cash in a brown paper bag every single time. They put it on the counter. That's how it goes every single time. I felt uncomfortable and was getting no support. And I tried to avoid them as much as I could and not be available as a teller, but that's unavoidable. So I did a total of 8 to 10, approximately. I just looked up my notes, and the last one I did in December of 2018 was for $18,700. So fast forward,
where did the 18.7 go?
It went to a cashier's check for U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
Thank you.
And anytime I asked any questions as a teller, the police were very evasive. They were kind of snarky, and that just didn't sit well. So for the period of time from April 2017 through the period of time where I'm going to get to very quickly here, I complained repeatedly. I was very uncomfortable. I decided I just needed to get a different job, but we have to pay bills. So I kept doing the good work. I was a great teller. Great documentation. Customers love me. Team members love me. I'm a great player, right? So I kept it up. I did it. Tried to avoid them when I could, but that was the way that it went. So then fast forward to the uptake at the border, which everyone remember those visuals, especially those of KBOO listeners will remember those visuals of women and children being tear gassed at the border.
Yeah, we posted them on the website, KBOO.fm, yeah.
And I went to work that Monday and I was kind of panic stricken because I didn't have any job prospects, even though I had been looking and I knew that they were going to be coming in. So I went to my immediate manager and I complained. I said, I don't want to do these transactions anymore. I would like to file, you know, I want to complain about it. And she's like, I'm really sorry, but this is your job. I was like, she's like, I know you're upset. I'm like, okay. I went to my other manager. He's like, I can't really do anything. I said, okay. So I then immediately...
just getting it on the record?
They wouldn't, they didn't offer that as a suggestion. They never once offered until I pushed to get an HR case going.
Okay.
So then... I reached out to the district manager knowing she was the only one that could make decisions, Julia Banks, who is named in the lawsuit that I've brought, that's been filed by Michael Fuller. She basically met with me privately. She was the only one in the room. She should have had a witness. She did not. She basically told me to shut up and do my job. And when I was crying and upset, she said I was moralizing to her, that I knew this was my job. And if I didn't like it, I could basically either get fired for refusal or I could quit. And I said, I don't have any options. And I'm a great team member. And I'm just asking to not do these transactions. Mm-hmm. This really bothers me. This is not a good look. Maybe this isn't okay. Maybe we should check and see if Wells Fargo should be participating in the facilitation of movement from the Portland police to Border Protection. And she said, that's not the question we should be asking. We have the unusual activity report. That will track it. And then I fired back at her and I said, no, I don't think that's actually going to cover this, but okay. She then got very arrogant with me, made me feel very bad, was very intimidating, and then left me in the conference room by myself crying. I basically tried to collect myself. She marched out immediately to my immediate supervisors and said, she will do those transactions or she will be fired. She will not be making herself unavailable. If she's available, she will do those transactions. So I then did that about a week. I showed up to work every day, very panic stricken. I was like, this is not okay. My immediate manager finally felt bad for me and he called HR and we filed an HR case, not only against an ethics concern, but also against Julia Banks. Then the pressure was applied and she basically said,
Who's Julia Banks?
Julia Banks was my district manager. Okay. And she's named.
Okay.
So she basically shut me down. She used to be very friendly to me. Then she would show up and ignore me completely. Basically iced me out for a very interesting term, right? Very ironic, but that's how she behaved. My immediate manager was the only one to assist me. I made an HR case. And then they told me it was going to take up to a month for them to investigate. I said to HR, and this is documented, I said, can you make an exception? Because this upsets me so much that I don't need to do these transactions until the investigation is complete. And she said, we don't have the power to do that. You will need to continue to do your job, whatever's required. I said, are you kidding me? And I started to cry on the phone. That video, that audio is recorded. Then I sat there and composed myself and did that for about a week. That was early to beginning of December. And then a few days went by and I thought, I can't do this anymore. Another child died at the border. I can't remember her name. May she rest in peace. And I was done. So as of, Monday, December 17th, I got up at 7 a.m. in the morning. I remember it crystal clear and I knew exactly what I was going to do. I filed a resignation. I was very thorough. I had my dates. I had all of that documented. And then I was seeking to find somebody that would represent me potentially to bring a retaliation lawsuit against Wells Fargo, and was able to connect with Michael. Maybe at this point, Michael can kind of go over the gist of what I know I've gone on, but that's pretty much what happened.
I want you to go on, and I would bet good money that people are listening very intently to everything that you're saying and hanging on to your words. So thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
So if we could talk a little bit about some of the practices of Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
they're known for or not known for.
No, they're known for it.
Go
I've had two different clients in the New York Times. We've had clients on the Today Show, NBC Nightly News, all people who used to work at Wells Fargo who, like Heidi, made a complaint about something they thought was a violation of a law or a rule or a regulation. In one case, someone who refused to go along with it. In another case, someone who just kind of grinded through it. And then these people were retaliated against. And they were treated with hostility, iced out, as you said. And that's just illegal. If someone complains about something in a workplace that they think's against a rule or regulation, it needs to be taken seriously, and it wasn't here. But further, it's against the law to then retaliate against those people and to essentially oust them out of the workforce. And that's effectively what happened here. And so this is a familiar story when I got this phone call. And so we filed a complaint, and we'll see what a local jury will do. We're seeking compensation. We're seeking an injunction prohibiting Wells Fargo from continuing this practice. We've also named Ms. Banks in the lawsuit so she can explain herself to the jury. And she's been, you know, sued for aiding and abetting Wells Fargo because Wells Fargo doesn't exist. It doesn't have a heartbeat. It doesn't have a conscience. It's a set of corporate documents that controls billions of dollars. And so one of the ways that we hold it accountable is to let the managers at Wells Fargo know the buck stops with you. This is a faceless corporation, but you're also going to have to come and explain yourself. And so that's what we'll do sometime in the next year. We filed this case last month, and so in the next year we'll have a trial here in town, and we'll see what a local jury decides.
Whoa.
Unless they decide to settle because they don't want that public record. I don't think they can handle any more ethics scandals. Can I add... Just, I want to add something really important.
Oh, yeah, you can add whatever you want.
It's kind of breaking news. So I can't name any individuals or any team members, but I will tell you what Wells Fargo is doing behind the scenes right now. And I have it on good notice. I still have people who know me who work for the company who are also scrambling, considering consulting with Michael Fuller. So there's other local employees of Wells Fargo. This team member has basically, they're trying to make him take the fall for her, and she's either lied or something's being orchestrated behind the scenes. And this will bear out because we have truth. We have video. We have all of it, right? We have documents. I have documents, everything. I've got facts on my side and truth. She basically, they've told this team member that a retaliation suit has been brought against him by me, which is a bald-faced lie. And he's very upset. He doesn't know what to do. That's about all I can say about that. But that's what they're doing behind the scenes. I think I can mention this as well. They also tried to contact me, employee relations, as soon as they got notification of this complaint. And yeah, I heard from nobody. Like, everybody out there should know. They did not contact me from employee relations of Wells Fargo until it was too late, and they're being threatened with exposing one more retaliation case. They didn't care. They don't care. The only thing they care about is money, and they're taking many hits. So the other thing I want to mention is that tell me if I should I continue?
You absolutely okay. Should continue.
So many people know Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's amazing. She goes after imperialists and
Representative from Bronx,
yes,
and Queens,
exactly.
New York.
Yeah. And so
beat out Joe Crowley, Democratic powerhouse, or Democrat,
yes,
Party powerhouse.
Yes.
And she's Puerto Rican.
Yeah, she's amazing.
What do you
shout
want?
Out.
Okay.
So she's pretty amazing. And recently, the now resigned Tim Sloan, and I just want to read this because it's pretty unbelievable. Many people saw the video. It's made YouTube. It's probably had thousands of hits, if not more, about her asking him about the connections to caging children at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, Tim Sloan, who was promoted to CEO.
And who is Tim Sloan?
Tim Sloan was the former CEO, is the former CEO of Wells Fargo.
Got it. Thank you.
He was brought in. He was promoted within the company. He was brought in to clean up Wells Fargo's mess after the ouster of John Stumpf. And Tim Sloan once told a reporter at CNN in April 2017, and I quote, "It is safe to call the ethics line," and has insisted that employees won't face retribution for flagging perceived or potentially unethical behavior. He has also been quoted as saying that one instance of retaliation is completely unacceptable. and now he's gone. And he has recently resigned after he spent more than 2 years trying, without success, to convince lawmakers and regulators that the embattled bank is no longer a threat to its customers. But it should be noted that he received $18.4 million in compensation in 2018. This circles back around to my point, and this relates directly back to the exact ethics complaint that I made and for which I was retaliated against. Tim Sloan denies Wells Fargo is linked to human rights abuses, as he did to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And yet I was there being forced to produce cashier's checks made out to U.S. Customs and Border Protection or be fired for refusing. We have a problem. And so they can remake their ethics all they want to, but employees know. And I think there's more people like me still scared. I'm just very bold, and I was bold while I worked there, as you know. I hope any employee that hears this will feel encouraged to stand up for themselves. I tried to encourage a culture of that while being a very respectable, good team member for Wells Fargo.
Right. When you were talking about AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Tim Sloan speaking to one another, can you just say like where they were speaking?
It was a congressional hearing.
Yes, a congressional
about banking.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I actually brought the quote.
She put herself on the committee,
which is
stunning for a socialist.
She did, yeah. She said, and I quote, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's amazing. Mr. Sloan, why was the bank involved in the caging of children and financing the caging of children to begin with? Ocasio-Cortez appeared to be referencing the fact that Wells Fargo had been in the business of financing private prison companies, and I have information on that as well.
It's been documented.
Yep.
There was a day of action.
I processed transactions for private corporations making profit off of prisoners, so there's that as well.
In February, mm-hmm. I think it was on Valentine's Day even, there was a day of action across the country. Jobs with Justice participated in it in coordination with Right to Thrive, or Freedom to Thrive, excuse me. Great organization, and we participated in a national day of action in Portland where we marched from Wells Fargo to Chase to call them to stop funding some of the private facilities that are caging children. People are familiar. There's been activism around this that's been documented as well. So I just want to affirm what you're saying, Heidi.
Yeah, so also what I'm reading here, I saw this video the morning it came out, and I literally threw something across my living room because I was like, you're lying. That's not true. I know for a fact, right? So Tim Sloan, formal CEO of
Wells
Fargo, he said, I don't know how to answer that question because we weren't, Sloan responded. She says, you were financing, involved with debt financing, CoreCivic and Geo Group, correct? He said, for a period of time, we were involved in financing one of the firms. We aren't anymore. I'm not familiar with the specific assertion that you're making, but we weren't directly involved in that. And I'm here to tell you that if Wells Fargo is facilitating cash from police departments, and I suspect that it's not just here in Portland, facilitating the movement of cash from Portland police or any other police department, and it's called civil asset forfeiture, unchecked, not deposited, because if you don't know about banking, if you don't deposit money into an account or withdraw it, there is no track record for how that cash is moving. There's only a serial number for a cashier's check. And unless you pull that, and I'm thinking to myself as a citizen, where's the checks and balances, right? We have a right to know when they're seizing funds where that money is going. So I don't really know. There may be some investigation on that. Anyone listening, I would love for you to take that up. But Wells Fargo is involved, whether they like to believe it or not. And I tried to tip them off from the Portland police to Border Protection, which if you watch the news, they're the ones tear gassing women and children at the border. So they, Wells Fargo, whether they want, like I said, they don't want to admit it. Tim Sloan didn't know. I don't know. Those are the facts, and the facts will bear them out.
So at the very least, there's a trail and a connection.
Correct.
At the very least.
At the very least.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know if Michael has anything to contribute to that.
Yeah, or is there something here that needs to be brought in?
Well, we'll see. Maybe it's illegal, maybe it's not. The key factor is that when an employee believes in good faith that something's being done wrong or against the rules or regulations, that needs to be taken seriously. And it just wasn't in this case. And we see that as a pattern in practice with Wells Fargo.
What kind of protections are there?
Well, you can go to court, and in a year, you can get a jury trial, and that's about the only protections available to you. I mean, you can report to the government, and you can report crimes, but that's not going to, you know, change the daily lives of workers who are being retaliated against or who are being even fired for doing what they think is right. They're, you know, you have to wait, and it's justice is slow in this system.
I want to acknowledge a caller that came in, my producer, Jerron. Hi, Jerron. Thank you for your work. Just said that a caller named Paul wants to know if you all know anything about cashier's checks from Portland Police to Border Patrol. And Paul, thank you for sending your message in. Paul is a person that helps keep KBOO on. You know, we're totally community led and driven and funded. So the reason that we can have critical discussions about Wells Fargo is because they're not advertising with us. How lovely.
That's so nice.
The
answer is yes.
The answer is yes, Paul. And Heidi spoke about that a bit already. If there's something else there that you would like to highlight to say to Paul about...
I just want to just highlight the fact that, like I said, the facts will bear out. There are serial numbers attached to any cashier's check that's made. So, you know, the thing is, it wasn't too much of an ask for me to say, could you please investigate this? And at that point, I was like, Wells Fargo could be implicated in this practice. Mm-hmm. I just felt like at every turn, something in my gut, and I've learned to pay attention to that because it served me well, that something in this process along the chain, something is off, and I just want to know. And I told my district manager that I didn't add to what I said earlier. I said, if it's proved that this is perfectly legitimate, then it's on me to decide whether I want to continue to participate in this practice. Mm-hmm. But I would like you to tell me that it's perfectly legitimate, legal, by federal laws, institution, whatever anybody has to be accounting for, mm-hmm. that the police department can be moving funds, drug bust money, which civil asset forfeiture, which we could do a whole show on that.
Oh, sure. I'm from New Jersey, honey.
And as far as I know, that needs to be held as evidence, which Michael may be able to answer to, and yet... my gut told me that that was not the case. I don't know how that works. I just question it. Again, these questions, things looking very odd, things looking very strange to me, and me trying to put it all together, and then the response from the police. So yes, in fact, back to Paul's question, cashier's checks have been made maybe once or twice a month at a particular Wells Fargo location. I'm protecting some of the team members that I know may speak out. And those are distributed to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. There are serial numbers. If those have to be, those records need to be pulled, what I'm saying will prove to be true. Mm-hmm. I stand on truth, as you know. They can say, and when it, if it comes to court, they can say whatever they want about me. I stand on truth. Yeah. I'm a very ethical person, which is why I thought they would care, because they're so big on trying to remake their ethical reputation. Mm-hmm. And so that will be very interesting to see how this bears out, but Michael may want to add something to that.
And we actually are seeing an uprising of employees at Wells Fargo who are taking a stand. And like you say, we have to, you know, we're not going to reveal names or locations, but I will just say across the country, sometimes at some of the highest levels in Wells Fargo, we're in communication with employees who are witnessing things they don't believe are right. Mm-hmm. And I think 5 or 6 years ago, we weren't seeing these employees coming forward, but, you know, thanks to people doing the right thing and whistleblowers like Heidi and like several of the other clients we've had, you know, people are getting the confidence to do the right thing. And they're saying, I'm not going to go along with this. And we're also seeing for the first time now, people in Wells Fargo management reaching out to us who we never used to see before. And I think that's because they're being held accountable in some of these lawsuits. And people are getting to understand that if you're going to profit off of this as management, you're going to be held accountable, not criminally, certainly, in this country, but at least civilly, at least in the cases that we bring. So it actually, you know, there is a bright side to it. in that people are feeling emboldened to do the right thing. And we've got, I would say we have probably as many people who have retained us now currently working at Wells Fargo as we've filed lawsuits for over the last 10 years, as far as employees go. And that's saying something, because usually employees call you after they've been wrongfully terminated. Mm-hmm. We're now finding out that employees are, you know, calling us in the midst of what they consider to be these illegal schemes.
Can you say what some of them are? Or just give an overview.
I'll tell you, having to do with one example is we represent somebody who works fairly high up in Wells Fargo employee management. And so they actually see what happens when employees complain about retaliation. And what they're seeing, they believe, is illegal. And it's very interesting because they're the person who would have been handling Heidi's complaint from a remote location. We're seeing people in wealth management come forward. And, you know, that's not my – I don't represent rich people or people with money.
What does wealth management even mean?
Right, so
– I can tell you.
Wealth management's basically people who invest money for rich people, and that's fine, whatever.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
I'm not necessarily sympathetic to that, but it's people in that business who are actually, you know, they make a lot less than their clients do. Some of them are somewhat working class, and they're saying, hey, my clients are being ripped off. Like the wealth is being, invested improperly, or there's things that are not being told. So we're seeing it, you know, it used to just be customers and homeowners, and then it's employees. And then we learned about the fake account scandal that affected millions. Mm-hmm. And now we're learning about, you know, manipulation of interest rates and veterans and foreclosures, and now even their wealthiest clients. So that, I would say, is a recent change, is that we're just seeing it across almost every aspect of their business.
Can you talk about the fraud of its own customers? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a multi-million dollar settlement that Wells Fargo entered because they had been accused of basically creating millions of fake accounts. And it's not, you know, rocket science. When you're paid based on the number of accounts you create, there's now the unchecked incentive to create fake accounts. And, you know, I just had to recently get a bank account. It killed me because I had to get life insurance and they made me have a bank account to do the direct deposit. But I'd been unbanked forever. But I had heard of people over the years saying, oh, you know, so-and-so passed away, or so-and-so is closing out their accounts, and they found out they've got 9 different accounts under their name, and maybe they've got $5 in them, or maybe there's nothing in them, or maybe we can't even tell what these accounts were. And then we found out several years ago that actually it was, you know, Wells Fargo employees being improperly incentivized to create these bogus accounts. And then to add insult to injury, Wells Fargo goes and fires, I think, was it 10 or 20,000 employees who they all identified were involved in this scheme, mm-hmm. that all sought to, you know, profit the people at the highest levels of Wells Fargo, the largest shareholders, the executives getting paid on, you know, by increasing productivity and numbers. So, yeah, I mean, I think Wells Fargo is alone in that. I don't know of any other bank or institution that has committed fraud on that type of level. And that's part of the reason they needed to rehabilitate their brand.
Yeah. I think now would be an excellent time to talk about the internal culture of Wells Fargo.
Thank you.
I'm kind of an expert now. And also with the analysis I bring into any situation, I can't turn off that brain wherever I go.
What
right?
analysis is that, Heidi?
So the internal culture of Wells Fargo, remaking their ethics image, and on the ground eyewitness report, it was very hard to swallow. I watched the way we treated customers, and also what I was not allowed to do as a teller. There were many, when I knew, again, sometimes we take jobs under capitalism because working class people, that's the only job you can take. So I said, hey, let me do the best I can do at this job working for Wells Fargo. This is an opportunity. I'm going to do the best I can do. I'm a team player. Here I am in life. So this is what I did, but I observed things. And I feel like every time I complained or every time I made an observation, I got the eye roll. I'm usually 3 steps ahead in a meeting. They tried to take credit for giving us $15 an hour before the 2020. I worked on the Fight for 15 campaign. So in a meeting, I was like,
thank you for that work. That's how we met.
I was like, raising my hand constantly. And they have a whole raise your hand campaign. And I was like, I'd actually like to let you know that while our company is taking credit for the fact that they're going to pay us more than anyone's getting paid at this point, minimum wage, actually, I was involved in the campaign, you know, to the fight for 15. And so Wells Fargo will have to in 2020. However, it's great that, you know, and I make a positive spin all the time. And so I did this constantly and I would try to test things. But I'm always like trying to be an ethical person. And I know it's Wells Fargo, but I kind of took them at their word. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, like the culture they create when you're kind of not paying attention, you feel really good about working there. They just make you feel so good. They're like these cheerleaders. You have your like your morning huddle and they get coffee for you. And so you can kind of be lulled into a sense of really not paying attention.
That's why you don't need a union.
Exactly. And I will say, I think I can say I had several people come to me quietly and ask me because they knew some of my, they're like, can we start a union at Wells Fargo? I said, it's going to be a two-year campaign. They're like, oh, never mind. So yeah, I was all about trying to equip people with good resources, which, you know, I'm all about. Where I wanted to go with this is that the observation I made initially when I knew about what Michael had referenced, and most people know about this opening of fraudulent accounts, I was there at the cusp of trying to remake the ethics image of Wells Fargo because of that scandal. So it was very interesting on the inside to be able to watch that take place. What I immediately observed is that those were bankers that opened those fraudulent accounts. And I immediately noticed as a teller that there were like four cameras on me at any time because the bank cares about money. Their most major concern at any employee in that company is a teller who might steal cash from their till. Now, I thought to myself, but where did the scandal happen? I would stand there and I think, oh, the bankers, most of the bankers and the managers. And I would look over and I see there's no cameras
right,
on
where are
them.
Those cameras?
And I thought, and I would look around and I'm like, there's four cameras on me at any time. I can't get away with anything. Mm-hmm. And they can pull the camera. And maybe because I'm a socialist, money makes me very nervous. And the whole time I worked there, like being in charge of other people's money, I'm just like, oh, it's very stressful. So now I have a job where everything's on the computer. It's great. But the day I had to let go of that till was the best day of my life. But yeah, so all of those kinds of observations and just the rah-rah cheerleader culture, back to getting to connect to what Michael had shared, the wealth management. One of the things you know about my personality is I connect with people very quickly. I've got interpersonal savvy and people will tell me all kinds of stuff. They are telling me their business before they even know that what they're doing. And so as a teller, also Wells Fargo likes to take credit for your customer service skills, and they couldn't figure out why, having never been a banker or in banking, why I was so good at the job. But that's because I'm a people person and I know how to deal with people and I know how to make that human connection. I'll just share this story really quick because I think it speaks to this culture of banking and when people go into a bank. We, all three of us here know, going into a bank is intimidating. It's a very intimidating situation. And so if you don't have money, under capitalism, you feel very bad about yourself. You kind of always, like, if you don't have enough resources, you think there's something wrong with you. Even though there's not, that's how you're made to feel. So I would be depositing checks for people, mostly white wealthy men, from the wealth management, from the stocks and loans. And I mean, I had lawyers.
These are departments.
All of these departments. Okay. Yeah, I was handling the checks from the lawyers. I was doing all kinds of things, and sometimes up to $1 million checks. So millions of dollars was flowing through my hands, whether it be cash or whether it be checks. Now, those people had a very interesting attitude, and I dealt with it, and I was very impressed with my skills to be tactful and nice and pleasant. And then you had a working class person.
Everyone can't do that, so thank you.
I don't even know. It's something from the universe, right? So, and then just like a quiet moment, I would have a customer come in, and we sometimes had houseless folks from transitions projects come in, just wanting to get $5 out of their account to pay for bus fare. People just trying to get some money for lunch. I can see all of their banking business, right? I can see what they have. And people would take $2.50 out for a bank or a bus pass, and they would apologize to me because they had so little money. And I was like, you don't need to apologize to me. I made those moments of connection with people. I was like, I see you. I'm working class. I got $10 in my account. I said, there is no, you come see me anytime. Like, don't even worry about it. And that almost made me want to cry, because that is the psychology of what banking does to people. And so, and then to see these people with $1 million checks asking me, or saying, oh, put it in the account with the lowest amount. And I'm like, oh, and I'm looking, I'm like, you got 500,000 and you got 200,000 and you got, you know, 3 million in some like brokerage account. And I would be like, I need you to pick which account
above board.
You would like me to put.
Everything's fine, I'm sure.
I would like, which account would you, I said, that's a lot of money to me. So I need you to tell me, so I do my job correctly. I need you to tell me which account you'd like me to deposit it into. Which account would you like to deposit into? And I would just keep a smile on my face. So this was my daily life at the Wells Fargo.
Wow.
I just wanted to show those kind of a couple anecdotes, because I think we have a chance to have a conversation. We got the legal, you know, and just the what it means to have to work in a bank every single day.
Yeah.
And then complain, and then I think
I have a personal anecdote from early in my career. If you can believe it, young lawyers, actually it's not as easy as it seems, and money is tight. And I was a brand new lawyer in 2009. And my firm, we've since obviously left Wells Fargo, but when I first came there, the paychecks were drawn on Wells Fargo. And this actually just came to my mind listening to you talk. And I would take my paycheck and I would drive on my lunch break to Wells Fargo to cash it for cash, because also I had unpaid student loans, and so I wasn't going to have a bank account anyway because the money's going to be taken. So I'd go cash it for cash, and I remember walking in saying, I'm here to present this check, you know, using my lawyerly language that I just learned. I'm here to present this check. And they're like, oh, you don't have an account? I said, oh, no. They go, oh, over there. There's this like stable. It's a lot of people who either don't speak English, you know, low income folks. I was probably the only person there in a suit. And they made you sit there for 25 minutes.
Yep.
And they had one person that would very slowly cash checks. And every time they would get up there, they would say, you know, you don't have to wait in that line if you get an account. And I said, why would I ever want an account with a bank that's trying to coerce people into getting accounts by making them, penalizing them and intentionally making them wait? And they're like, well, that's not what we're doing. And it's like, yeah, it obviously is. And so it just occurred to me, like, all right, that's not necessarily fraud, but it's coercion. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, driven by just a culture of profit. I bank with a local bank, and I'm sure they're not perfect, but I tested them out. I cashed my checks over the counter there for 5 years and finally formed a trust with the local manager, and so far so good. But you know, you really have to think twice before you choose to do business with these national banks. I represent a lady, right? Well, I actually probably can't take her case because the law doesn't allow her a claim, because financial institutions aren't subject to elder abuse in Oregon. But it's a retired lady who moved to Canada and wanted to transfer her IRA up there, and Wells Fargo fouled up and just cut her a check, and now she owes almost more in taxes than she had in retirement. Wells Fargo won't even respond to her or do anything. And, you know, you've really got to think twice before you, you know, do business with a bank like Wells Fargo.
So if you could just lay out some of what you think people should know about Heidi's case, general public, what should people know about how you're working with Heidi?
A lot of people should know that before you work at Wells Fargo, make sure you haven't signed some sort of arbitration agreement, because one thing Wells Fargo likes to do is bury cases. And I can't say that they're currently doing it, but in the past they have made employees sign arbitration agreements where you say, if Wells Fargo violates your rights, you don't have a right to go to court, you don't have a right to a judge, you don't have a right to a jury. Wells Fargo will choose a business person, usually a rich old white bank attorney, who will then decide what's fair. And there's no appeal, and you don't have the right to do discovery or get access to Wells Fargo's records. So one thing I would say is, if you're going to work for a bank like that, make sure you're not signing away your right to go to court, because it's in the Constitution for a reason, and it gives them a huge leg up. Another thing I would say is, if you're working for a bank like Wells Fargo and you believe that something's going on that's not right and is in violation, potentially at least in violation of a law or a regulation, you should document it in writing, because Wells Fargo will do what Heidi described. They will circle the wagons against you, and they will spread lies
so
about
to speak.
You. Yeah, so
coach.
To speak.
Oh my goodness!
Circle the stagecoach.
You are a poet, sir.
They will make you out to be a liar. They will come up with a, you know, in Heidi's case, she quit, and that was actually probably for the better, because what they will do to whistleblowers is create a pretext, and they will make you look untrustworthy or mentally unstable. Or you know, I had one client where Wells Fargo was continuing to just assert that he had like some sort of fetish with guns or something, and it was just completely false. And I had another,
Guns have something to do with
Nothing at all, but they have to come up with some reason that a jury might think, well,
it's so bizarre, it piqued my interest. Go on.
No, it's just, okay. Yeah, it's absurd. And they'll go back on your resume and look for, you actually finished community college in 2005, not four, like you said. So also be careful when you're applying with these companies, make sure that everything is 100%.